Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
My parents were always very politically correct. One of the few games my brother and I were allowed to play growing up was Cowboys and Native Americans. We weren't allowed to use guns and bows and arrows. Instead, we had to use apology letters and discount vouchers to casinos. I'm sorry for taking your land. Here's a letter. Oh, don't worry about it. Things happen. Here's 20% off our buffet.
Well, you are listening to truly one of my favorite comedians, not just because he pretty much almost won on America's Got Talent, but he is just one of the funniest guys in America today. I'm so happy his career is going great. He's coming to Chicago, and that's why he gets to talk to me now. Taylor Williamson, again, from America's Got Talent, but really a star in his own right, is joining me here on Behind the Curtains podcast. Taylor, welcome. Thank you.
Paul, that's the nicest introduction I've ever had following that weird joke that you found. How did you find that? That's a random old joke you found.
It was random, but I wanted to do something that was sort of familial. I listened to all sorts of things that you've done, but I just said, no, I'm not going to. You've got a whole routine about America's Got Talent, whatever. And we can talk about that, but that was just like that inside thing. I just loved it, so I figured we'd use it.
Thank you, brother.
I love
Chicago.
Yeah.
My mom's family is all from Chicago.
My
mom's from Highland Park.
Sure. I grew up in Skokie, which is right next to that.
Shalom.
Shalom Chaver. Yes, we can. We'll do a whole thing. Should we do it all in Hebrew?
Yeah, so my all Jewish family is Chicago. I hope that doesn't hurt me on ticket sales. It should help me, right?
No, we're all coming. We're going to bring it from the burbs, especially when you're out.
Good.
Yeah, when you're in Rosemont, we sometimes get a passport. We go out there.
Like, there's some states where I'm like, I don't know if I should mention I'm Jewish, but Chicago's a safe, wonderful place. I can be like, I'm Jewish. Come to my show.
Right. Now, actually, and it's funny because, you know, as we play the Jewish geography game, your name is not terribly Jewish, is it? You come from a mixed family?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm still white, you know? But, yeah, my mom's Goldberg.
That would do it.
Yeah, that's like, okay, we get it. Relax.
I probably went to school with her. So in your visit back to Chicago, so it sounds like you spent a fair amount of time in this area. You know it well. You know how we laugh and what we find funny.
Chicago's, I love it. I've been there a whole bunch of times. I opened at Zany's for like Uncle Larry Reeb, 12 years ago. And, what else? I did the America's Got Talent tour. We did the Chicago Theater.
That was great.
Really special.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really cool for me. This is my first time headlining downtown Zany's. I've never done that before. And I got to do Rosemont last year, and I had an amazing time. And my family came out. They didn't cause any problems, so that was really special.
Well, I might sit with them, and yeah. I'll blend right in. You wouldn't even know I was there.
Perfect. You can just, you know what people do? They do. I did a show in Arizona this weekend, and people come up to me. They're like, "Hey, do you know who we are?" And I'm like, oh, "Don't do this." And then they turn out to be like my mom's cousins, and I'm just happy that they bought tickets.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Thank goodness they didn't call you ahead of time and say, "I'd like to come, Taylor."
For real, I had to have a stern talking with my mother, as you do.
I kind of relate. Because you know why? Because your mom is taking credit for you. You are here because of her, and she wants to therefore control who is coming in to see your shows.
Dude, you're really hitting it on the head. That's why everything I talk about in therapy is basically that.
Me too.
I had to have a talk where I'm like, Mom, you know how I'm like a comedian who's pretty good at his job? It's not, you shouldn't be proud of yourself. You should feel bad.
Right.
Means that something went wrong in my childhood. I'm so good at trying to figure out how to get a validation from strangers at the highest level.
Exactly. And I know you do this bit about when people come up and sort of like, if you're an artist and they'll say, who's the best drawer in your family? And you sort of said, people will look at you. Who's the funniest one in your family? It's me, dude. I'm the comedian.
Dude, I love you. You listen to my album. You have Jewish mother issues. This is great.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. That's why I relate to everything. Hey, so let's talk about America's Got Talent for just a moment. I think career-wise, you've certainly moved way beyond that. But you know what? You've turned it into a routine. So to me, that is just so funny. And you are. I had Vicki Barbalak on the show last week. Brandon James is a good friend of mine. If you know Brandon, he was season 8. I think.
Yeah. He was on my season.
That was the same season.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I collect a lot of memorabilia, and he left his shoes at my place, so I now have a pair of his shoes. So I don't. If you want to pop by and drop something off, you know, you're welcome to.
I'll bring shoes to Zany's.
All right. Okay. But anyway, I love the fact. So you did not win America's Got Talent, but you and Brandon and Vicki, you are my proof, as well as others. You sometimes it's like American Idol. The ones who do best are not the ones who win the thing.
By the way, my first time ever on stage 15 years ago, Vicki Barbalak was the headliner. So I'm from San Diego, and so is she. So like that was really special to see her get her chance to shine, you know? I'm so lucky, like, to have even gotten to be on this show. Like, that show, if you're on for one episode, it could change your life.
Right.
You can go viral and stuff, and... I'm so lucky. I shouldn't have gone that far. Like, I'm proud of what I do and stuff, but it's ridiculous. You're going up against the most ridiculous, talented, insane acts. And
well, you could say that, but meanwhile, you came in second. You just happened to lose out to a Japanese guy that I still don't understand exactly what he does, but.
No, he's cool. I just went to, if you look on my Instagram at Taylor Comedy, I went to Japan in January. We hung out and we did a sumo wrestling competition. He beat me again. So that was great.
He's never going to win. And you went back for Champions. So I don't know how many interviews you've done since the Champions thing. But when they first contacted you, was it a producer? Because, you know, I don't know how they decided who it is other than you certainly belong on the Champions show. But I'm kind of wonder what led them to say, well, here's who should be a champion. Here's who's not. What was your reaction when you got that phone call? Like, did you really want to put yourself through this again?
Well, honestly, the competition and judgment aspect of it is not enjoyable to me. It was slightly traumatizing. And I wish it was like a showcase of here's our 50 favorite acts from around the world. That would have been more special to me. But it's their business, and that's what people like to see. They like to see Simon Cowell going, I don't think you're funny, and I don't get it. So, and that's what happened. Sure. So, because my judge was Howard Stern my season.
Yeah, right.
But it was, I mean, it's great. I'm so lucky to get to go back, and I'm touring harder than I was last year because of, I don't think, even though that's a terminology, I'm touring harder. I'm getting a whole bunch more work now because I was on the show this year. So
it pays off.
You don't, me a lot.
Once again, you don't have to. And once again, you lost out to, Shin Lim. I think he might be Korean, I think, is what he is. Either way, you're losing to Asia. The Asia is not a good country. For you.
Well, I didn't think about that. I think he's American, though, at least. So
yes.
Know?
But that won't be as funny.
No, yeah, I'm the second most talented person in America, and I think I'm the 50th most talented person in the world somehow. So.
Right. Hey, did you ever get, you know, the bit you would go on and, you know, play to Heidi Klum all the time and all that kind of thing? Did you ever, when you're writing that material, do you kind of say, I want to be edgy here, I'm going to go for it, I don't know if she'll be offended or whatever? Do you clear that stuff ahead of time? Hey, Heidi, this is what I want to do. How does that all work?
Well, like in my real life act versus my... I mean, if I'm going to do something on America's Got Talent, on America's Got Talent, I said my joke where the only like actual Heidi Klum joke I have is I say I got to kiss her on the mouth after I lost on America's Got Talent. I would have rather had $1 million.
Right.
When I went on the show and then I said that, but I mean, I wouldn't want to upset her, you know. It's funny, like, there is that struggle of wanting to be an edgy comic. Like, I'm an artist, I'm gonna say what I want, but there's also like, I respect these people, and Heidi Klum's the reason I have a career.
Yeah.
Like, sincerely, like, she played along with all my shenanigans and stuff, and that's how I was able to connect with the audience, because in those competition shows, it's, you're just a guy doing a thing and then you move on. But I got to have a storyline, which is impossible on those shows.
Right.
So, and without like a tragedy and stuff, I kept begging them. I was like, let me talk about getting bullied. I'll make up something. I'll have some kind of disability. We'll figure it out. And they were like, no, we're going to stick with this. And it ended up being the best case scenario for me.
Wow. So you did run.
If anyone's bored, they can go to my website, taylorwilliams.com, and I have the whole journey on there.
Oh, let's do it. Now, did you, I imagine you did have to run your material by producers, and they might say, no, you're not going to do that bit, or we don't want you to do that?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. There was the no, you may not do that because of standards and practices, like legal stuff.
Oh,
and
don't let that bother you.
I'm sorry?
I do television every night. I'm not concerned about that.
Well, you know what's hilarious? I did Last Comic Standing for 2 episodes, like, years before.
Uh-huh.
And there's this one joke that I have. And I was embarrassed to repeat a joke on television, but I was like, you know what? This is a competition. I need to do my strongest jokes. And I don't care about any comic being like, you already told that joke, because it's kind of tacky to repeat a joke. It's just because we should have more, you know? But I was like, whatever. So I have this joke at the Last Comic Standing where I use the word condom, but it's not a sexual joke. It's a ridiculous joke about things I find on New York City streets.
Okay.
And then I'm a class act, you know, and I'm a great guy. And then, but then on America's Got Talent, they're like, you can't say condoms, you can say prophylactic. And I was like, what? I don't know if this is a good story for sure.
Yeah. But it's like going back to the days of I Love Lucy. You can't say pregnant, but you can say with child, having a baby, find some other way to do it. Why they're still doing that then?
In the same time slot on the same network, and they're like, well, this is a family show, that wasn't. And I'm like, what? And I didn't fight hardcore, but they told me like an hour before I went on stage, and I was scared, and I didn't know if the show was like rigged or not. And I was like, I don't want to upset the producer, so I just said it their way, and the joke didn't work. And right. But it led to Heidi Klum not liking me, which led to me having a thing with her. So.
Exactly, the perfect thing. So, okay, I hate to ask the questions everybody would ask you, but of course, because you seem to, how much do those guys, the judges, play any role in your career now, or that was then, this is now, no connection, except maybe they'll show up to a show somewhere?
No, they're all pretty over it, I'd say.
over you.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't hang out with me or help my career at all, but they did. I mean, I went back on Champions and Heidi like said nice things about me, and I mean, I see them backstage, and Simon's pretty unavailable, but the other ones, like Howie, like if I hit him up or something, he a couple of years ago, he brought me with him for a couple of gigs in Canada. Wow. And we got to fly in his jet. Like, it's fun. Like, that was really special because I'm like a weird Jewish nerdy guy. And like,
so was he.
I got to have can you believe it? And I got to have I didn't mention I was Jewish on America's Got Talent. So I want people to vote for me, you know?
Well, I didn't know until that. I think I heard it in just one of your routines or something, but I said I didn't know it either. But I thought maybe we grew up together. I don't know. But by the way,
my mom was in a rock band with Jill Stein in high school. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, really? Not in Chicago, not in the suburbs.
In Highland Park High School.
Julie Stein was from Highland Park?
Jill Stein.
Oh, Jill Stein. Jill Stein. Gotcha.
The lady who tried to become president.
As in, yes, she was on my show, Dr. Jill Stein. In fact, let me tell you, she actually gave an answer on my show. If you choose to do more politics, you might work into your act. I said to her, you know, Jill, you're because I do a nightly political show. And I said, you know, you're really polling at about 1% here. I mean, at what point do you give up? And she said, I kid you not, and she said this on TV. She said, Paul, that's because the polls you're talking about are likely voters. Among unlikely voters, we're doing much better.
I mean, that's true, I'm sure, but still 1%.
Yeah, but what percent of all the people who aren't voting are for you? Good luck with that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, do well on that. You tend not to. You really do reflect a lot on your life and family. How much of that is it? I mean, my understanding, comedians, is much of it has to be based in truth, right? You have lived through a lot of those things.
Sure. Like, my act is, you start off with the truth, and then you take it to a ridiculous place. But I am trying to get to what the kids are connecting with these days are just, like, authentic experiences. Like, I've heard that Amy Schumer's new special is her best one, and she's not doing a character and saying horrible, ridiculous things, as all of us do. Like, she's now pregnant and talking about her husband has Asperger's, and she's talking about her true experiences, so... Yeah. I am trying to get a little bit more into that. My comedy is still ridiculous, but like, I got carjacked when I was 19 and pulled out of my car, and the guy couldn't drive a stick shift, and I had to drive him to the destination. And like,
oh, and that's,
so I talk about that now. That's
sure. And assuming that you were driving Uber at the time, you made some money on it too, I hope.
I think I was the first Uber driver, actually.
So when you do, I always wonder about this too. When you do routines on television, you've got millions of people hearing it. How much overlap can you have? So when I come see you at Zany's on April 23rd in Chicago, I'm guessing I'm not going to hear a lot of routine, but go, oh, he's done all this stuff on TV. You have to have, right? You have to say, God, once I've done it on TV, I kind of have to give it up now.
Yeah, that's a weird struggle that I talk to comedians about. And because it used to be you don't want your clips online, because people will come see you and then they'll know the jokes already.
Yeah.
But now everyone's putting all their stuff online, and then people, I don't know. But for me, I try to have integrity and respect for audiences. And if they saw me last year, I don't want to repeat too much of the same stuff. And if they saw me on, just watch my comedy special on Amazon Prime or illegally uploaded to YouTube, they could, I don't know. My point is, I'm giving you a long answer to say the act that they'll see live is not my comedy album or my special. It's a whole different act.
It won't bother you, though, if I yell out something like, I've heard that one.
There'll probably be 4 minutes of stuff maybe 5 minutes of my hour will be stuff that you have heard before, because you've done your research. And I respect you. But thankfully, most people aren't as good as you are.
Yeah, that was putting it nicely. And let me ask you, I want to ask who your comedy influenced. I have a sense of who I think influenced you. And so far, I interviewed Nathan Lane once, and I asked him who he thought about it. And most people for him say Zero Mostel, and I said to him, it's not Zero Mostel, because I knew he hated that reference. And anyway, it turned out to be Jackie Gleason, which is what I said to him I thought it was. I have a thought about it for you. So let me ask you who a comedy influence is for you. Or I can tell you.
I want to hear yours.
Well, I think you're influenced by Stephen Wright.
Oh, sure. You know what's funny is I had to go back and look him up after people thought I was like Stephen Wright.
Okay.
Because I was influenced when I started by Mitch Hedberg.
Wow.
Who for sure was influenced by Stephen Wright. So you're right in many ways.
And how much of the Taylor we see on stage is Taylor? If you and I were sitting and having a drink, or we're talking now, is this like, yeah, this is the same guy you see on stage? Or is it a role that you do? Is Taylor Williamson, the comedian, a role you perform?
My favorite thing I hear, I don't know if this is a compliment, it probably isn't, but when people say you're the same on stage as you are off stage, I think I'm pretty much me. I mean, they say it's you with the volume turned up is okay. The best way to be. I don't know who they is, but like, I would say on stage, I'm me, but then I'm me 100%, but my material is probably me at like 200%.
Which you almost have to be, right? Do you ever get the thing I love? It just happened to me last week. When people come up and tell me I look much better in person than I do on television, and I just say, so what you're saying is I really look like crap on TV.
You know what I get all day is, like, every time I do meet and greets after my shows, and without exaggerating, maybe twice per show, someone comes up to me and goes, you're taller than I thought you'd be.
Well, like, I can see that, though. Well, okay, but, you know.
I guess I seem tiny. I appear to be tiny on my clips on YouTube.
AGT? I wouldn't say you. No, but if I were, how tall are you?
I'm 6 feet tall.
Oh, you see, I would have put you, because I'm sort of like 5'8", 5'9", and I thought we were probably about the same height. So I'm gonna be looking up to you.
A lot of people do. the other thing I get, which is not flattering, is, do you really sound like that in real life? And I'm like, what? They're basically saying, you have the worst voice I've ever heard. I hope that's not real.
Right. I know. People mean to be nice, but they just say the dumbest things, and you just, but you know, I'm sure you're nice to everybody. You realize they're coming from a good place. It's called stupid, but they're coming from a good place.
Yeah, like, what's your, like, from Last Comic Standing in America's Got Talent, I when I was on Last Comic Standing, I was on for 2 episodes, and I got kicked off before people even voted for you. A very common thing I would get is, oh my God, I saw you on Last Comic Standing, I voted for you. And then I would correct them and be like, thank you, I didn't find out if you voted for it, but thank you for watching.
Right.
And they're like, no, I voted for you. Then I learned to just go, thank you for voting for me,
right,
even though they're lying.
Right.
You have something like that you just have to like nod and say yes when people are being weirdos?
Maybe they are just looking for you to, you know, here's a dollar. Thank you.
I mean, yeah, but I've done that too. I'm sure I've met somebody like famous and said, you're my favorite actor. You know, you say dumb things. I don't know if you, but many humans, we're all humans, you know?
Yeah.
We say partially. Things that we don't believe.
Right. Right. Actually, I kind of had this experience just the other day when I told somebody I enjoyed them on Broadway because I knew they were in this Broadway show and I had seen the Broadway show and I just assumed I saw him. And he said, wow, really? You saw me because I was an understudy. And you're kind of like, you're kind of, where do I take that now? But I assured him, yes, yes, I definitely go to understudy performances. Those are always the best.
Hey, yeah, listen, we're all doing our best with what we've been given, you know?
Right. Hey, so do you know yet who is warming up for you at Zany's in Chicago and Rosemont, or is that all handled by those folks?
No, sometimes I bring someone with me, but they're taking care of it. I might ask a local friend to do a 5-minute guest spot, as they call it.
Oh.
That's one of those clubs where I don't argue with them. There's only a few of them, honestly.
Right.
But there's there's certain clubs where if they're like, we want to use our local openers, where I'm like, okay, I trust you because Zany's is so legendary in Chicago, has such a ridiculously killer comedy scene. Like,
oh yeah,
there's so many like of the current huge comedians right now that are from Chicago. John Mulaney is like a monster now.
Right. Well, I'm hoping when you get here, there'll be a chance for you to come on to, obviously, you know, WGN, what we're doing, but you know, WGN TV as well. And,
yeah, of course.
So if they, I'll mention the producers because, you know, we've got Mike Toomey, who's a professional comedian, Pat Tomasulo, who's doing a Laugh Your Face Off thing this weekend at Park West. And I mean, it's just, there are so many great comedy talents, even within this building, but I don't know that you've never done the morning show here, have you?
No, I would love to. I did a radio show.
Yeah, different.
I did WGN Radio.
Sure you did. But this is the TV. I'm gonna toss your name in because I hope they get you in if you... I don't know how long you're going to be in the city, but we'll...
I would love to. I'd come in the night before or whatever. That would be awesome.
It would be wonderful. Well, I want people to be able to catch you. Let's tell them where you are. April 23rd, you are Zany's in Chicago on Well Street. I'll be there. Hey, maybe we can have a piece of fudge next door at the Fudge Pot when the show is over.
Awesome.
And chocolate-covered Oreos. They got everything in there. Have you been in there, the Fudge Pot?
No, I haven't been to that club in over 10 years, probably.
Oh, okay. Well, this is just a candy shop that's right next door, but we'll check that out. So that's at Zany's in Chicago. And then on the 24th, Taylor's going to be at Zany's in Rosemont out in Park Place. And that is on April 24th. And, you know, listen, tickets are not that expensive. You're worth it. But, you know, $25, you get some food, you get a drink. It's just a great night. You get Taylor, the headliner. Some other comedians will be on the stage with him. And you know, I've just come. In fact, I went last night to the Laugh Factory, which is in the city. Sometimes I just think going to a comedy show, you know, I see a ton of theater. I cover theater. But, you know, sometimes going to a comedy show is just a very fun thing to do. And I'm going to guess we watch you. I don't see you. Your act is not taking people down in the audience. You're not the insult comic. None of that's going on. People can just relax and enjoy you.
Yeah, dude, you're so good at making me sound like I'm worth coming to. Thank you.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I don't talk about politics stuff. I just try to make people laugh, and I talk about like duvets and labradoodles. We're not changing the world here. We're just trying to make you leave and have your cheeks hurt when you go home. That's
exactly.
All I want.
Exactly. Or my schnauzers. We could talk about them too. Well, I will do everything I can not to heckle you, but I'm sure I will find your family from Highland Park and join them because Skokie should always sit with Highland Park.
Yeah, find out why I'm not rich, because I tell people my mom's from Highland Park, they're like, ooh, look at you. And then like I'm like struggling to pay my bills. Like, so.
Well, hey, when you come back, do you have a favorite restaurant? Are you like a Gino's East guy, or where's a must-go to you for you?
Oh, but gosh, I'm not. Now everyone in Chicago is going to be like, oh, we hate this guy. Uno Pizzeria?
Sure, why not?
I'm just joking. I don't know. What do I need to eat at?
Well, Lou Malnati's. I would say Lou Malnati's.
St. Charles. Pimani? What is it called?
Oh, in St. Charles, the club out there?
Yeah.
I was out there to see Mike Toomey. St. Charles, it took me Boy, until I agreed to go see Mike, I love Mike Toomey from our morning show, and I said, Mike, St. Charles, that's like an hour out of the city. That's like, you know, that's like you need a, like a fly, you fly there. And, but anyway, so, yeah, well, I'll make some recommendations. We'll make sure you're all set and safe. And I'm just so glad
you're,
and I'm going to word it this way. The Taylor Williamson's coming home.
Oh, you know, oh, you're very kind. Oh, you know where I went when I went when I was in Rosemont? I went to, the Bill Murray, was that Bill Murray restaurant? Murray Brothers?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's the name. It might be. I'll have to check on that. And you know, the second we're done with this interview, you're going to remember every single place you couldn't think of as soon as we're done.
and I just keep it going. People like, this last 3 minutes of this interview was the worst thing I've ever heard. Just Taylor going,
I can't come up with a restaurant. Wait, I do have one other place. Have you ever eaten at Hackney's? Hackney Burgers, onion loaves?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, unless you're a vegetarian. You're not a vegetarian, are you?
I'm like a half. People are going to be like, I'm not going to come see this guy. He doesn't eat beef. I'm like a, what do you call it when you eat like chicken?
A chickatarian.
Yeah, I'm like that.
Okay.
God, I really destroyed this interview. I'm sorry. You're doing great. You ended it with a positive, like you're coming home. And then I just had to keep going with this.
We're back in the food.
There's a Caddyshack restaurant. I don't know what it's called.
You know what? I'm actually sitting next to me is our executive producer of the Midday News, and I'm going to have her turn around, and I'm going to ask her if she knows the name of Bill Murray's restaurant. Can you share it with us?
Well, I don't want to plug them.
She just said it's in Rosemont, and I absolutely don't know it either. So there you go.
Yeah, tell them they owe us $1,000.
I will. That was too much of a plug that we gave them. Taylor Williamson, I look forward to seeing you at Zanies in Chicago on Tuesday, April 23rd. You can get tickets at 3. Just forget the phone number. Zanies.com. And on the 24th, he's in Rosemont. See, if I didn't see you in Chicago, I was going to come see you in Rosemont. But you're by the casino there. We could start gambling. That could be dangerous. But Taylor Williamson comes home. America's Got Talent. The guy that should have won, as far as I'm concerned, he did win. And you can also visit him at TaylorWilliamson.com. Taylor, I'll see you in a couple of weeks, and I appreciate you.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
You got it.
All my life, I have been a boy. I have been falling into you. Francesca, this is where I land.
Oh, what a beautiful song. Just one of the many beautiful songs from the show Bridges of Madison County, which is playing at Theo Ubuque Cabaret Theater up in Evanston. And it's brand new, beautiful location. I've seen a few shows there now, and I just love going up there. This one's no different. And joining me to talk about the show, which, to be honest, I don't even think it's beyond Broadway that I've seen it a lot around the country. So maybe we're doing some kind of a first magic here. We'll find out. Joining me, the leads, the stars of Bridges of Madison County, Kelly Harrington, who plays the role of Francesca, who's got some explaining to do about that role with me, and Tommy Thurston, who plays Robert. You also have some explaining to do. And Carl Herzog. I just feel bad for you in this show, Carl. That's just me. You're just such a nice guy, but those are my values. So welcome to all of you to Behind the Curtain podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, so now maybe people who don't... By the way, so I'll start with you, Tommy. Do you know, am I right, Bridges of Madison County, I don't think has been performed a ton around the country since Broadway, or am I wrong?
I think the rights weren't released for a while after it happened on Broadway. And I think some regional theaters across the country are starting to tap into it. I'm starting to see it pop up more and more everywhere.
Gotcha.
At little regional theaters. But yeah, it's probably because of the rights.
Well, you've kind of set the standard for this. And Kelly, your performance, absolutely amazing as Francesca. But for those who don't know the show, tell us, you can make yourself sound and look as good as you want in this description of the show. What's the show all about? Redeem yourself.
When you said before I had some explaining to do, you made me think of Jessica Rabbit. She said a long time ago, I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that way.
There you go.
No, my fault. Francesca's written that way. So Francesca is a war bride, and she moved to Iowa with her husband after the Second World War. And so she's been living in Iowa for almost 20 years, raising a family. And so the story is about, well, hijinks ensue. She's a slightly bored, or more than slightly bored, housewife, and living in the middle of just this flat country. And one day someone comes to the door looking for directions to the covered bridges, and you know, fate steps in, and, you know, I don't want to give too much away if people don't know the story. I've been actually surprised at how many people aren't familiar with the story.
And of course, and for me, what justified, and well, we have to sort of say that that Robert comes into her life, and he doesn't leave her life immediately. So there's, you know, I mean, I think we can leak a little of that. Something kind of magical happens there. And so, Tommy Thurston, so in your role as Robert, listen, you're not looking for trouble when you get there. You are just taking some pictures.
Correct. Yeah, he is there for his job, and he's there taking pictures of the covered bridges and doing a story on that, and happens to stumble upon Francesca when he's asking for directions, and then, you know, fate steps in from there.
And just happens to have a six pack in his truck, so that's always useful. I swear I've never done this before. Have another beer, lady.
We do a lot of drinking, don't we?
There is a lot of, and but by the way, so what's in though? Is it water in those bottles? Of course,
it's water.
Oh yes.
All right, you could have lied.
It's for pure hydration purposes. Right. Because we never get to get off stage.
Yeah, think about that. Yes, and of course that's all directed. But I imagine there's times you're thirsty and you're like, give me another beer. Wait, that's not in the script. I'm thirsty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Carl, we're going to talk about your role in this, because I do feel for you in this role. But I also knew when I did this
podcast,
I had to have you on this show, because I got to know you better than anybody in this performance. And I got to know you all through that evening. And explain to the listeners why you and I developed such a warm friendship relationship that night.
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I think the main reason you're talking about is because it's a dinner theater. So the actors have the opportunity to wait tables, make a little extra money, and meet people, talk to them before the show starts. It's all catered by Feast and Imbibe. It's a catering group in Evanston, and the food's really good. So I get to come in, serve people, get some drinks going, and then talk to them about the show if they want to. Talk to them about the space, talk to them about the theater, and let them know that it is a cabaret theater. And that's another reason why I get to know you and get to know everybody during the show, is because it is very immersive. And Theo has a very unique way of doing theater where we really talk to you and engage you in the story. Not in like a John and what is it, Tim and Tina's Wedding or whatever.
So, right, Tony and Tina's Wedding. Tony and Tina's.
Yeah, that's the one.
Well, I think they're doing a Tim and Tina, but that's down the line. But so the thing is, now I, of course, I've been going to Theo Ubuque for years, so I know what I'm in for. When you came over, I certainly knew you'd be in the show and all that. I just think that's one of the amazing things about this cabaret, is that it's fun to talk to the artist. And you, and of course, I kind of hassled you a little bit more than maybe most customers might, because that's me.
Oh, no. The dad jokes come out, especially in that theater. Everybody starts really getting after it. So.
Okay. So, and by the way, do you know, I don't know how many shows you've done before they were in the new space, but you know, it used to be that the menus were a mirror of the show. So like when they when they did Chess, you had Russian, whatever it was, Russian stroganoff, beef stroganoff or something. Yeah. So, and when you had, when it was Sweeney Todd, you had meat pie. That was a little questionable to me. But so here we're kind of just doing some chicken, although I had beef tips that night. Really, really good food. Great place to go for dinner. But now, Carl, now that we know you were also my waiter, and by the way, I tipped you well. You may or may not remember that. But unlike others.
Well,
like,
if you say so.
He's in the show. I'm not leaving him any money. Anyway, tell me about Bud, because I just kind of feel sorry for you.
Tell you about what?
Bud.
Oh, Bud. Bud is a farmer. He was a soldier in the war. He met Francesca there, and along with 20,000 or so other women and children, got them over to America where they could have a better life after Naples was completely destroyed. So it was very common for these war brides, as they're called. Sounds worse than it is. And we had a great life together. We raised a family together. We have a 300-acre farm, which is enormous, and he's one of the best. He's got to be one of the most successful cattle ranchers in the area. So he's just an old cowboy, and he's not a bad guy, but just doesn't really know how to have a loving, romantic relationship with this beautiful woman that he met over there.
But he does with a, he does have a great relationship with a steer. That's nice, because that's we.
Yeah. He's a steer. He's my main connection to my kids and everything.
Yeah.
I try to get them involved in that, because that's really all I know.
I wish they would actually have a steer in the show. I was in New York, and they have Once on This Island, and there's a scene where they need a goat, and a goat walks out.
Oh, like, right,
well,
the
we
goat.
Talked about that. Yeah, like
that's so great.
Yeah, we were like, we need to get the cow involved here.
Right. Just don't do that after you serve me the beef tips, because I begin to wonder what was going on.
Exactly. In the kitchen. That's how it ties in. You got polenta, right. You got the grains. Good.
Yeah, that polenta. Wait a minute. So, Kelly, in the truth, though, again, we don't want to give too much away, because, and this, by the way, was the movie with Clint Eastwood and Meryl Streep. And once you kind of have that in your head, you kind of see where this drama, this story would kind of play out as a reason for that. But in the end, Kelly, Francesca, she's not a bad person. I mean, she just is looking for answers in life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she's had this sort of stifled existence, you know, just by necessity. You know, we learned that one of her early aspirations is to be an artist. It was what she studied before sort of the world, you know, her world exploded around her. And she thought that this opportunity to go to America was her chance to escape that and, you know, possibly find, you know, what she had been hoping for. And she kind of, you know, ended up walking into the thing that she was wanting to avoid.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I mean, it's Tanya and I talk about this a lot, how as we go through the performance each night, we can sort of feel the energy of the audience swinging back and forth between whether they support me or against me, or if they support Tommy, you know. And it's because it's an absolute moral dilemma that and you can there's pros and cons to all sides of it, and somehow I don't know if it's by virtue of the music or the story itself, it's just so human, it somehow ends up being a really beautiful story and not, you know, a horrible morality tale, you know, something that could be a sermon on a Sunday.
No, because these characters, they are redeeming. And Tommy, you know, even your character, Robert, I think it's important that the audience like him. We need to like him. We can't disagree. And I think we do.
Absolutely. I think because Kelly and I actually talked about this a little bit. Not specifically about Robert, but particularly the way the Broadway direction was taken on the characters was that it was played the entire time during the original Broadway production that they knew what they were doing was wrong. And in a way, I think that that's why the Broadway production didn't work so well and didn't do so good on Broadway, is because there was no redeeming qualities about these characters. And I think that there has to be in order for you to be able to root for them in the story.
Yeah. And Carl, would you say that Bud is, is he naive? Do you think he kind of knows that there's things going on? He doesn't want to face it? Or is he truly in his own world of farming and the kids and whatever? And he's just not, it just doesn't hit him.
It doesn't hit him that she's having, that the affair is going on?
Well, you gave it away. I didn't want to give it away, but yes. you guys can give away anything you want.
No, I think that I really want to leave that up for the audience's interpretation, because some people come away with it thinking that he does, some people that he doesn't, that he's had to reconcile some, you know, but that's a tough question and a tough question to answer, because it kind of gives away a lot of his motivation for what he's doing, yeah. whether he knows or not, and I think that that's part of where a lot of the drama lies, and it'd be a lot easier if, you know, Bud knows, and you know, he's kind of a jerk. But if the audience feels for him and likes him as well and sees him, oh, he's not really that bad of a guy. He just is kind of, you know, he's kind of doing his own thing. Then I feel like that can kind of heighten the drama too. So it's not just like, oh, well, it's fine for Fran and to run away and do her own thing, because, you know, he's neglectful and a jerk. But I don't think that that's how it is.
No, and I wouldn't have tipped you over the dinner if that's the way I felt about Bud. So I you know, I would have taken it out to you that way.
Again with the tip.
I've got this cookbook at home, which is the cookbook, The Recipes of the Bridges of Madison County, and I don't know why I have it or where I got it, but I came across it the other day. Yeah.
So, wow.
I probably should.
Merchandising.
I should send it to exactly, right? Where we put all these things together and then it's like you saw the steer, you just ate them. No. But anyway, well, the show is wonderful. You guys do such an incredible job. And the good news is that the show has been extended through May 5th. I hope you know that because you're not going anywhere until May 5th.
Yeah. What?
What? The Bridges of Madison County at the Theo Ubuke Theater in Evanston. Tickets are at, this is so tough to have to say, but Theo, T-H-E-O, then a hyphen, and then you.com.
Ubuque.
What? Ubuque.
Theo Ubuque.
Yeah, I never say
it's
it right.
It's a Latin-Greek mashup, and it means God is everywhere.
Oh, thank you for that.
Yeah.
I thought this thing was started by Teddy Ubuque a few years ago. What do I know? I was going to say, tell Ted I said hello. 721 Howard Street up in Evanston. Kelly Harrington, Tommy Thurston, Carl Herzog. This is a challenging show. It really is. It was almost a refreshing challenge to sit through at the theater. And but so glad you guys are doing it. And so glad you guys are in it. And people have until May 5th.
Thank you so much.
You shouldn't miss it. And I thank you for your time. We're going to go out playing a little bit of Kelly singing What Do You Call a Man? Because it kind of lets us know what challenge she has to go through. So here is What Do You Call a Man? Thank you, guys.
Wanting something, knowing something, seeing something, something holy, something newly born without an
name. If you knew my story, my heaven and my heart, if you knew my story,
you'd have a good story to tell.
That is music, one of my favorite songs, actually, from the show called Bright Star. You may remember it. You may be familiar with it. It was on Broadway, and it's, to my knowledge, the only musical written by that incredible comedian, Steve Martin, along with his writing partner, Edie Brickell, and played on Broadway, and now finds itself at the Greenhouse Theater Center on Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. Joining me? Two stars from Bright Star, Missy Wise, who plays the lead, Alice Murphy, and Jeff Pierpoint, who plays Billy Kane, and we'll talk about those roles. But first, welcome to Behind the Curtain, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you so much for having us.
So I had never seen the show. I did not see it on Broadway, so this was my first experience with it. And, you know, it unfolds. I mean, by the intermission, you're kind of going, okay, this is sad. But Missy, let me come to you because your role is critical. It's actually sort of two parallel stories that go on. I have to be careful about what to give away here because obviously we can't give everything away. So I'm going to let you tell the story. If somebody comes and says, Missy, tell me what Bright Star is about, what are you willing to tell them?
What am I willing to tell them? Oh, boy. Bright Star is about a woman's journey through life. You see her at both ages of 16 and around 38. And she has these flashbacks to her girlhood. And then we see how her life unfolds from there. And at 38, she meets a young aspiring writer. She is a publisher herself, an editor, and she develops a special relationship with him as well, and we see how their lives are parallel to each other.
And enter Billy, right? Billy Kane, Jeff Pierpoint.
That's right.
That's right. And by the way, I was talking about both of your backgrounds, but since I'm on to Jeff here for a moment, Jeff, you'll be happy to know I actually spent Saturday evening with Alan Menken. You've done a number of his shows, right? Newsies and some great stuff, and enjoyed you in Gypsy, and you have been in How to Succeed, given our discussion prior to our talking.
Yes.
But anyway, so Billy kind of is this, I don't know, would you say naive, clean-cut, fresh guy who's has a dream?
Yeah, Billy, you know, he's from a small town, Hayes Creek in North Carolina, and, you know, when we meet him at the top of the show, he's just returned home from fighting in World War II.
And so he's this really hopeful, really positive guy who has now kind of seen this uglier side of the world. And so when we meet him at the beginning of the show, he's kind of vowing to do everything he can to make his life as bright and as positive as possible. And, I mean, that's what really stuck out to me when I first read the story and first knew about the character, was this person who is so desperately wants to cling to the joy and the positivity in life.
And very
I think
powerful.
That's really at the heart of Bright Star, yeah.
And absolutely, and of course, the other characters that become so important, like Jimmy Ray, and there's a couple of daddies in here, and that is sort of interesting. Missy, when I look at your background, I know you've done Legally Blonde and Sweeney Todd, Bonnie and Clyde. I saw you in Bonnie and Clyde, among others. This is a bit of a different role, and I'm just sort of curious for both of you, is playing this. I don't know, you're in a Steve Martin musical. Does any of that matter, or this is like, no, this is my next role. I'll do it.
I think it was, I particularly love the way that this show is written for both of us, for both of our characters, because it's not very often in a show that you get to play such big comedic moments and then such intensely personal, darker emotional, things all in one show.
Yeah.
And so, as far as, just like getting to do the role, you just kind of do the role that's in front of you. But this one was really important in those ways, and for the fact that it's Steve Martin wrote it. So it's hilarious and really heartfelt and sweet.
And Jeff, I don't think we know like what lines Steve wrote and what lines Edie Brickell, his writing partner, wrote. But throughout the show, I had these moments where I turned to the person I was with and I said, that's a Martin line. Do you kind of feel the same way, that there's some, it's just so funny, so whatever, it's Steve Martin.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's very rare, I think, to find a musical that has such a strong, emotionally powerful score and a book, a script that rises to that level. The book, the lines, the text are just as strong as the music is, which really makes it so much fun for us as the actors to sort of mind that for all the different moments and all the different beats that we get to share between characters on stage.
Missy, this is, the way to describe most of the music, I think, is bluegrass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't think of any other show, Broadway bound anyway, where you would say, oh, it's primarily bluegrass music. It seemed unusual for me, but it really, from the first moment I heard it, it really grew on me. I kind of liked it. It was nice to step away from a traditional Broadway sound.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been really fun for me to explore. I grew up in the South and from Louisiana, and so these are sounds that I've been hearing my whole life. And so it was really nice to really sink into and live into the kind of singing that I've been hearing since forever in this sort of format and what I do in musical theater. The closest that I got to it was doing Blanche and Bonnie and Clyde. A bunch of her songs were pretty bluegrass or country, but not overtly, but those hints were there. And so this was a really great way to flesh that out.
And so when I left the theater, I kept thinking, and again, I'm not going to give anything away here, but for both your characters, so Jeff, for Billy, and especially for you, Missy, when it comes to like your parents and stuff, or Billy, you know, for Billy's dad, I don't know. I feel like if I was Alice, I just like would totally not be talking to my dad ever again. So I thought it was interesting that Alice, and again, people need to go see the show to understand why it is I would make that comment. But Alice seems to forgive. Does she really forgive him? Do you believe that character forgives him for things that he's done? Or I'd be done with him.
it'd be really rough. The whole story we talked about with our director, Erica Mack, the whole story is about redemption, and it's about forgiveness and family. And so I believe, and it's about knowing the truth, and the truth is really important through line in this show. And for whatever happened before the scene that I think you're talking about, there is a big emotional piece to it. But I think that here forgiveness is a gift. And for him to have given her this gift of this truth that he has been suffering for what he's done, I think she honestly is in a place to kind of give him that gift of forgiveness in those moments. But I'm also understanding Southern parental relationships with your parents. You kind of see your people regardless of what they've done in the past. So there's that layer of that in there as well.
Maybe critical. They brought somebody in from the South to who grew up there to do that role. You know, and Jeff, one of the things I noticed too about the ensemble, sometimes ensemble players are just there. You pay no attention to them. But I found myself, and I imagine it was directed this way, it's like every one of them has a personality. I mean, some of them have roles and they just keep showing up. But some of them are just kind of, you know, I'm thinking of Max and just some of these characters which are, you know, smaller roles. And yet you find yourself looking at them when they're on stage. There really is a sense of story about all of them.
Oh, absolutely. And I think a big part of that is the space that we're in. We're in such a small, intimate theater, and so the audience is really up close and personal. And Erica, really, our director, she worked with us really closely and really intimately with the ensemble in fleshing these characters out and making sure each one of them had a distinct and unique point of view. And they are really the vehicle that moves the story, that keeps it progressing. I mean, they're there, they're on stage with us in every scene, in every moment, and they really kind of highlight and emphasize these moments of truths being revealed or secrets being discovered. And so, yeah, I mean, they're as key players, I think, as Alice or Billy or Jimmy Ray.
I absolutely agree. And so, Missy, would you say, I mean, the way it's directed, how hands-on was the direction? Or were you given some freedom to find these characters? And were you influenced by the Broadway show if you didn't, you know, either through clips you would have seen or maybe you saw it?
Mm-hmm. I got to see it on Broadway. And so I was definitely influenced by things that I felt when I saw it and things that I saw. And Carmen Cusack, who was a revelation in the role of Alice. But as far as our direction, Erica and Julie Nichols, who is also our music director, they are maybe the best team. And they're very hands-on,
absolutely,
but very collaborative. Very collaborative. We went with the emotion that we were feeling in the scenes. Things weren't mandated to us, which was really great for actors. We got to explore those moments together. And because the space is so intimate and the story is so honest and intimate, it was important to all of us that for all of the scene work, that we brought it to a very honest and smaller and intimate place.
Absolutely. I've had the opportunity to interview Carmen Cusack, by the way. What a great lady she is. Just so nice and wonderful. Mm. Well, this is the Boho, by the way, in its 15th year, I think. So congratulations on being part of that presentation. Bright Star is over at the Greenhouse Theater Center, and you can get tickets at greenhousetheater.org. It's playing through May 5th. It was just such a, I was so happy to you know, be able to, I couldn't make the opening, but to just get there on another night and see it. I missed it on Broadway. I didn't want to miss it here. And I think Steve Martin's in the audience one night, or Edie Brickell, I think they would look and say, you are doing this show proud. So I want to congratulate both of you on the work.
Thank you so much.
Done. Don't miss.
Thank you.
Bright Star. Yeah, over at the Greenhouse Theater Center. Missy Wise, Jeff Pierpoint, I look forward to your next performances after this one as well. You're both great actors, and thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's been a blast.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.